Historically, construction has long been an archaic process. Materials are sourced and moved to a site. Buildings and structures were then assembled, stick by stick, brick by brick. Susceptible to the elements, labor shortages, material volatility, and scarcity, traditional construction has long been inefficient. Today, buildings are increasingly being born twice. I know, that may sound more inefficient, but this approach has landed our guest company, DIRT, number one in manufacturing on Fast Company's Most Innovative Companies of 2025. First, a building takes shape inside a climate-controlled factory where robots slice aluminum and 3D printers spit out custom connection nodes. 10 days later, those walls roll onto a flatbed and click into place on a job site that's suddenly a month ahead of schedule. This is industrialized construction, and 2025 may be its watershed year. Global analysts value the offsite construction market at $165 billion and climbing fast as cities scramble for affordable, low-carbon ways to build. In disaster-ravaged communities around the world, modular crews are now the first to break ground, slashing rebuilding times and insurance nightmares. This method is minimizing change orders, elevating working conditions, tightening to-market schedules, and optimizing spending.
There's been this further horizon that we've all been waiting to arrive of, okay, there's not enough skilled trades and there's material scarcity, but those things are now upon us. And in fact, we're grappling with how do we deal with that. And what it's caused, Demetrius, is this inflection point where now what used to be a premium or considered a revolutionary way to build, and we're just going to keep doing it with, you know, steel studs and gypsum board, has now flipped to a point where it's actually less expensive for us to build it offsite.
That was my guest, Benjamin Urban, CEO of DIRT. I'm Demetrius Lynch, and this is Spaces, the podcast where we explore the forces that shape our spaces and how they shape us. Thanks for coming back, everybody. In today's episode, Benjamin joins me to discuss everything you need to know about industrialized construction. Before steering this prefab pioneer, Benjamin grew Agile Interiors, one of DIRT's biggest partners, diversifying markets for global clients. His resume includes Johnson & Johnson International Business, IHS Market Intelligence, and Casino Development Abroad for the Gilman Group. Armed with a business degree from the University of Denver and international credentials from Tech de Monterrey, he now champions industrialized construction that's fast, flexible, and sustainable. If you design hospitals, retrofit offices, or just love rethinking how it's always been done, you don't want to miss this conversation. We cover software, scheduling, costs, sustainability, and much more. And we'll get into all of that after this break. Hi, Demetrius here. As you may know, Spaces is part of Gable Media, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You may have heard me previously mention the development of a brand new membership platform for Gable Media. Well, it's finally here. You can now sign up to be a member at gablemedia.com/members. And as your first major perk, you gain exclusive access to our continuing education program, including AIA credit-worthy courses. That's right. Gable Media is now an official AIA CES provider, and you can get credit for listening to Select Spaces episodes. The days of scouring the internet for online courses and running around town for credit-worthy presentations are over. I've tried out our program, and it is the most convenient way to get your continuing education credits. Now, this membership tier will be limited, so make sure to go to gablemedia.com/members or just click the link in the show notes to gain access today. All right, Benjamin, thank you for joining me. Can you give me a little brief description about you and your company and kind of how you got to where you are today?
Happy to, Demetrius. So my name is Benjamin Urban. I'm the CEO at Dirt. We are a multi-trade prefabricated offsite construction that's technology enabled. And I came to Dirt roughly 3 years ago. Prior to being the CEO at Dirt, I ran our largest construction partner based out of Houston, Texas, for about, almost 15 years. Prior to that, my background is in construction, development, international business. I worked for a company building casinos outside of the U.S. for a period of time. My family had a construction company in Los Angeles that I ran for many years. And prior to that, the rest of my experience is kind of Fortune 100. Worked for Johnson & Johnson Information Handling Services Group, which is now part of S&P Global. So diverse background, but I'd say Demetrius very much focused on construction and development.
So your projects are more on the larger scale.
In a previous life, yes. I'd say what's interesting about what we do, Demetrius, is with Dirt, it doesn't really matter how big the project is. It could be a million square foot campus, or it could be, you know, one feature wall for a Wells Fargo branch. So really anything in the interiors world from an architecture design perspective. But because everything that we manufacture is through our ICE software technology, it could be a door or it could be 5,000 doors.
So over your time, how have you kind of seen, it's a very broad question, but how have you seen construction sort of evolve? What are some of the things that jump out to your mind of big evolution points?
I'd say, because I've been part of this world of we'll just call it industrialized construction for 20 years now, we're at a really, to be honest, encouraging point in time where a lot of the reasons and rationale behind why you would prefab offsite, use technology for automation, really wasn't in the mainstream until I'd say probably the last 5 years. I'd say there were some you know, starts and stops, but really it had to come to a point in time where it was painful enough that all of a sudden it was like, okay, yes, we need to find another way to do this and that it's not sustainable. And that if we don't find a better way to build, we're going to run out of ways to build. So there, I'd say there's the resource side of it and what we can or can't accomplish. But then also this really compelling time where there's an inflection point between not just what we're building and how we're building, but through a true sustainability lens. And it's not greenwashing. It's not, you know, many of the things that people have seen over the years, but really getting at the core of why we can't continue to build conventionally and we have to move it forward. And so I'd say that's what I've noticed even in the last few years, Demetrius, is this appetite for advancing how we manufacture for construction and us getting to be a part of that is really rewarding. The challenge that many of these manufacturers have isn't necessarily what they're building, it's their ability to scale and their ability to do it through technology. So for us, we were fortunate that we were born of technology, right? So we didn't manufacture anything prior to our ICE software. So if you're trying to go backwards and reverse engineer that, it can be challenging. And I'd say that's probably one of the things that's the biggest difficulty for offsite prefabricated construction is how do you automate and how do you scale and how do you improve upon what is usually done on site?
Yeah. To set sort of a baseline, can you talk a little bit about that traditional construction process?
Yeah. So the good thing is most people are quite familiar with it, whether it's been in your home, it doesn't matter what the vertical is, whether it's residential, healthcare, government, commercial, pick your flavor. At its core, traditional construction is sticks and bricks, drywall, or gypsum board. And it's probably one of the most archaic ways of doing anything in our world that has simply not evolved because it didn't have to. There's been this kind of further horizon that we've all been waiting to arrive of, okay, there's not enough skilled trades and there's material scarcity, but those things are now upon us. And in fact, we're grappling with how do we deal with that. And what it's caused, Demetrius, is this inflection point where now what used to be a premium or considered a revolutionary way to build, and we're just going to keep doing it with, you know, steel studs and gypsum board, has now flipped to a point where it's actually less expensive for us to build it offsite, prefabricated. And therein comes all these benefits with that that you or any other kind of average user would not be able to participate in, whether it's a sustainability lens or speed of construction, cost certainty, adaptability, all those kind of waterfall effects that you get. The barrier has always been cost, right? And now it's become not just cost, but resource scarcity, right? And so how do we get past that? There isn't any other path than going this direction.
So were those kind of the pain points and the complexities that you see? Is it the cost, the resources that's propelling us towards this more industrial type of construction?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting in that even though we've been doing this for 20 years, a continued response I get when people come and visit us, whether it's in Calgary or in Savannah at our manufacturing facility there is, and this is even with customers that we've had for years, is I had no idea or I didn't believe you, right? And so we, even us having done it as long as we have, we are still doing that education to create credibility around what we can do. And so I'd say that piece of it is so critical in that in the past, it was, okay, if you can do this, prove it, right? And so the other side of this is when we do have customers that have used dirt as a solution for construction, at the end of those projects, and it, again, it doesn't matter if it's a million square foot campus or it's, you know, one wall somewhere, the resounding response is, why doesn't everybody do it this way, right? And I think that's the hurdle that as an industry, not just us, but every other manufacturer has to basically get beyond is moving out of that safe space of, well, we've always done it this way to there's a better way. And not only is there a better way, but look at what the outcome of that is. And then there's obviously the sustainability piece, which we can unpack a little bit separately.
What is the extent of this industrialized construction that you're working with? Is it just offsite? Are you getting into the 3D printing as well? Or give me a sense of what you're doing.
It's all the above. And the reason is, so if you think about what we do, it's sort of like 3D printing on a large scale. We do use that type of technology for some of the rapid prototyping we do from an innovative perspective. But really, it's not just us, right? Yes, we are a interiors construction material provider, and it doesn't matter what the vertical is, right, that we're deploying them in, but we are that element. Then you have, you know, structural steel, possibly you have glass curtain wall manufacturers, mechanical, and MEP is a whole nother layer that is also moving offsite. The thing is that they're all interrelated, right? And that's also been part of the challenge is if you only pick one piece or one part, you may not necessarily get the full benefit of it. And that's been that is the value there to actually entertain a different way to build. And so as we've had other manufacturers that are complementary that work in parallel with us come along, we're now starting to see some critical mass. We I think this will be really interesting to share. We presented at our industry has an annual event called Advancing Prefab, and it really is the kind of leading minds of industrialized construction. And when we presented at that, and it wasn't around the solutions that we manufacture, it was more around the software and the technology and how we do it. And One of the things that we've always struggled with construction projects in general is, okay, if you can have mass customization, self-expression, anything you could imagine, and we can manufacture that and get it on site in 10 days, that's great. But if everyone else takes 3 months, are you still getting that value on what we accomplish? And so that we kind of flipped it to the audience there and said, oh, think about it from this lens. What if every part of your construction project had a 10-day lead time? And if you imagine what sort of impact that would have on our industry where we're all operating at that same level, it would be amazing.
Two of the other areas, I think that cuts down on your time savings. You alluded to the savings on costs and resources. Can you give me a sense of maybe rough percentage on cost savings and I assume the efficiency in the materials that you're using? Kind of what does that look like?
Yeah. So Demetrius, there's really a few reasons why you would use dirt or offsite prefab, right? And really, all of them de-risk construction. So that could be speed, like you mentioned. So that could be not just speed of manufacturing, but also speed of installation and construction. So on a small project, just, and again, we're just the interiors piece, right? So if you add everything else, when you talk about industrialized construction, it's a multiplier effect, right? However, because we're tackling the most complicated portion of the build, which is also tends to be the longest portion of the build, we'll move the schedule to the left a month on a just generic project, all the way to we could move it 50%. So you could build a hospital in half the time. And that's just our piece of it, not bringing into account everyone else, right? So there's the speed component, which obviously also de-risks from an operations and financial perspective, a project, if you will. There's performance, right? So you're going to get enhanced performance, whether it's aesthetic, it's acoustic, it's rated, whatever that is. If you're manufacturing it offsite in a controlled environment, you're going to get enhanced performance once that deploys or delivers on site. And it doesn't necessarily matter how it gets there. And so where I'm going with that is, it could be stick built on site that is also prefab. It could be volumetric, where we're a component of something else in a larger envelope that's being delivered there. I'd say that's something else that's evolved in the common understanding of what is prefab is very different today than it was even 2 years ago, let alone 10 or 20 years ago. And so in a good way, that's blurred a little bit. So the from a cost perspective that you specifically asked on. So when you're manufacturing offsite, obviously you have in a controlled environment, so you can use not just higher quality materials, but you can also design, we'll call it design for disassembly, DFMA. There's a lot of key terms that are out there when it comes to industrialized construction. But what it does is, as you're investing, right? If so, let's say you're a building owner or developer or just end user, conventional construction, you would be putting 70% of your budget towards labor on site and roughly 30% towards the actual materials that you're building with. When you move that offsite, you have the opportunity now to flip that. So now you're investing 70% into your actual product or the materials that you're investing in, and only 30% in the labor on site. And so as labor's continued to increase in cost, right? And as we've continued to become more efficient and lean through our manufacturing processes, those two things complement a lower cost basis. So that's just day one, right? And I think that was always part of the challenge of the narrative around why you would use prefab. A, there was a perceived premium, whether that was true or not, but it was always, okay, well, you won't actually get a return until you've occupied. That has now changed to a point where, no, you're getting a return before you're occupying now. Everything else is just a benefit on the other side of it. whether that's sustainability or adaptability. I think that's the other piece that is many times had not been fully explored, is when you design for disassembly, that means that you're deploying something that's not permanent and it's not intended to be there for its entire life. And so if you can deploy something and then adapt it to another use, another building, another user, what have you, we've been doing it for 20 years now, such that I've been fortunate enough to see product that we manufactured 20 years ago in its fourth installation, in its fourth location by its fourth generation owner, right? And so it's proven that that circular economy of construction material products can work and it can remain relevant. Because that's the other piece too, is like, well, yeah, we might have manufactured that 20 years ago, but is it relevant to today in performance or aesthetic, what have you? And because we were fortunate to start with the technology, it's allowed us to be backwards compatible all the way through the first products we delivered to the ones that are coming out of our product development today are totally interchangeable, such that you can take product and adapt it with new innovations to become a rated partition or something different without ever having that product enter a landfill.
I wanted to emphasize that point on the 70-30 labor material split flipping, because it addresses two major things that are happening right now. One, the issue of the labor market and, you know, getting people out there to the job site. So lowering that to 30%, massive unlock. The 70% now being able to, it gives you a lot more wiggle room for materials. One, you can either get higher quality materials, or it addresses this issue of material costs rising through tariffs and whatever other issue. You get a lot more wiggle room to move your materials up and down and still not have to, you know, bust the entire project. So I love that idea.
Yeah, like when I was saying about de-risking, when you move things off-site, the other thing you get is price certainty, right? So if you're budgeting a project, and to your point, forget about, like, doesn't matter if it's tariffs, it could be a raw material commodity had a spike. Like, there's a myriad of reasons why you would have price uncertainty. By moving it off-site, you actually have the opposite effect. And so even for us, Demetrius, manufacturing both sides of the border, but even with the 25% tariff, and I think this has been interesting to see how other manufacturers have not necessarily pivoted, but how it's maybe identified where there may be weaknesses in that supply chain for them. So we 93% of our raw materials are sourced in North America, and it truly is aluminum, MDF, steel. Like, we're sourcing raw materials, but we're truly manufacturing, not necessarily assembling. And I think therein is the interesting piece that's so critical, is for us, the blended effect of 25% across the board to you as a customer would have been at a maximum 5%. And it actually ended up being about half of that. So I think it shows that even when you have uncertainty in commodities and raw materials, there is a path to mitigate it. And it's not as pronounced as if you were to be doing it conventionally, because you're also pulling it upstream, right? And so a traditional construction project, typically no one's procuring material until as basically as close as they can possibly get to when they're going to deploy them on site because of that uncertainty. For us or other prefab manufacturers, your window is less reliant on a project-specific basis and a larger volume basis, saying, okay, if we do $200 million in revenue, this is the amount of material we're going to need. And so it basically blends that across all of the projects that are happening, such that you have a longer window. So you have a longer view out on what that cost is going to look like. And so it helps de-risk from that perspective.
Benjamin, I don't want to get too much into the secret sauce, but of what you can disclose, you talked about you guys have like a particular process. What makes your process unique?
Yeah, so it really comes back to that ICE software. So that is our proprietary software that we utilize for configuration, engineering, manufacturing, automation. And so it is a robust software that allows you to do, it's native to VR. You can walk around in the space, you can draw in it. But what it's doing in real time is it's doing what normally would be done manually. So all that engineering and automation process is already programmed into the software such that you can draw it, but then that file, if you will, is what we manufacture off of. That's what unlocks all of those things that we can do. And why that's so important, there are a few other manufacturers that we provide that software to. Armstrong World Industries is the largest of our ICE customers, and they use it for the same reasons we use it. But that secret sauce is unique. And the reason it is that the barrier to entry to creating the software to do that is so high, and there's nothing off the shelf that does all of those things. There's great configuration software, there's great engineering software, there's great automation on the manufacturing side. There isn't anything out there that ties all of those together. And so therein is what's unique to us. I'll use and I encourage you to check out this group as a follow-up to our call. It's called ICMA, Industrialized Construction Maturity Assessment. So it's a division of ICG, and they're a consultant group that have effectively been created to solve exactly this. So what we lacked as an industry was a common language. So you could have one person saying, hey, I'm doing industrialized construction and prefab in interiors here. And you could have someone saying, I do the exact same thing, but to what level? And it wasn't to differentiate who's better than another. The point of it was to provide a path such that you could see, okay, so for us, we were awarded the Platinum Medallion, so the highest award that ICMA has ever given, which is the top 1% of industrialized manufacturers and construction. And what it did was it showed, okay, here's how you get there. These are the things that you need to do to create that roadmap for other manufacturers such that they can learn best practices from us. But also that engagement that we did with them was also self-reflective, right? And how can we continue to evolve and manufacture leaner and increase in all of the value propositions that we provide? So I think that's a good way of putting it in. The secret sauce almost always comes back to technology. And without that, we wouldn't be able to do any things that we do.
You touched on it a little bit, or hinted at it, the sustainability component. How is that layered into this process?
Yeah, so we, as many manufacturers do, are quite selective about the materials that we use to build with, such that we are responsibly sourcing through procurement, whether it's recycled aluminum content or recycled wood products, recycled insulation. So effectively finding every way that we can to reduce the environmental footprint of the material that we're using. To me, what's more compelling is the other side of that. Once that product is created, then what happens to it? And so many of us in our industry are aware of it, but the general population maybe not so much, that construction is the largest contributor to global greenhouse gases in the world. And so we have the least advanced industry contributing the most pollution and greenhouse gases. And so if you could find a way to ensure that you're never putting product into a landfill, in addition to the materials that you're using to build it, you're helping solve that. And so we've begun running case studies on many of the projects that we've deployed. And because we're going back, let's say 10 years or more, yes, some of our customers were very focused on sustainability and they were choosing it for that reason. In reality, not all of them were that. And so identifying projects where they didn't even choose us because of sustainability, but if you go forward 10 years now and you run an analysis on, let's say, two buildings that we built out for a customer, and you recognize that we diverted 100,000 pounds of global greenhouse gas emissions simply because everything that they've been using for 10 years has been in the circular economy. To me, that's where the importance is. Yes, we need to be responsible with the material we use to manufacture, but more importantly, ensuring that that product or solution is effectively within the industry for perpetuity is a more powerful statement.
We're currently going through a phase on a federal level where this push towards sustainability is being, you know, broken down. With your building owners, have you seen that conversation shift one way or another? Are people continuing to plow ahead, or are they taking advantage to save costs?
I would say what I've observed is that it hasn't affected them from a decision tree. What I will say is that being a more frequent conversation, and that with our customers, they're recognizing that they're getting it whether they're asking for it or not, right? So there isn't a premium associated with it, I think makes a huge difference. And so a misconception that you're paying a premium for something because it's sustainable is a false narrative now, such that you can prove and say, look, you're not paying a premium, you're just getting that whether you want it or not. And at a minimum, if you're using a method of industrialized manufacturing or construction to deploy or deliver a project because you simply can't build it because there's not enough people or not enough material or not enough time, that's that really interesting point that we're at now, where we are getting new customers adopting this new way of building because they have to, right? And not just because they have to, but they're not paying a premium to do it. So those two things combined are quite powerful. And I'm sure, knowing your background and some of the conversations you've had, a lot of our general contractors, the larger ones, are also challenged with how do we identify new revenue streams and how do we create a multiplier effect for our self-performed teams, right? So they're at the point of the spear with on-site challenges with labor. And so, as you mentioned, you commented on my comment about us essentially reducing by a third, right? Two thirds, the amount of manpower required on site. It's a win-win for everyone. We just haven't been at this point in our evolution as an industry until now.
And the other side of that sustainability conversation, I think, is also the operating costs are more often than not a lot lower compared to buildings of the past.
Significantly less, right? And the only way to do that is through these new forms of construction.
Yeah. For someone that's, you know, shifting towards a industrialized construction method, what are some special considerations, things that they should know and sort of be aware of as they make that transition?
Yeah. As with everything in life, Demetrius, start early. If you're trying to reverse engineer something that's already been programmed and designed, as an architect, you're more aware than anyone, trying to recreate that through a different delivery model, it's not that it can't be done, and it's done frequently. However, it's usually done because they're trying to solve for something else that was unknown that happened. If you start early with we are going to deploy this through this method, you will see efficiencies throughout the entire project, right? Because now you're leaning on offsite to handle the things that you would have dealt with onsite. So your drawing sets are less complex and less complicated because you're not trying to design how to build something onsite. You're placing something that's already designed and what it's going to look like and where it's going to function. And I think it's really important because what it does is it also unlocks, from a design perspective, the ability to redirect a lot of that fee towards the actual design of the space, the occupants, what your intended outcome is. And so really it is the earlier you can start, the better off you'll be. And it's not just for the interior component, right? So it's every piece of that. Once you've determined that you're going to deploy a construction project this way and you put together that team, then you get all of the benefits and then some. So as I was commenting earlier, it's a kind of a multiplier effect as you add each of these together. It also gets that team aligned. And this is, includes everybody, right? This is the building owner. This could be the end user, could be the architect, the GC, like that everyone's aligned in how they're going to deploy this. That's really the most critical piece of it.
Yeah, it's funny. That's one thing that designers, I think, don't take into account as much as they should is how a building will be built on the site in traditional construction. But I love knowing that with industrialized construction, you don't have to think about it as much, it sounds like.
You don't. And it also, back to de-risking, right? One of the largest costs for architects and designers is insurance, right? Mm-hmm. And you're ensuring, right, that you're building a safe space and safe place. If you can redirect that offsite and know that you're getting something that's going to perform higher with less risk, why wouldn't you do that? You know, I use this analogy many times because there's some comedy to it, which I think you would appreciate is, again, there are some out there, but most designers and architects don't wake up every day wanting to do elevations for casework and cabinets for a break room, right?
I hate it.
And why would you do that over and over again when we can do it offsite through our software literally in a minute and it's automated and out the other end it comes? Like, why would you do that when you could take those skills, right, which are continuing to be more in demand and deploy them around, I hate to say this, but true design.
Yeah. So from a technical aspect of putting drawings together, is there anything that designers should be aware of in coordinating with the ICE program or anybody else that does industrialized construction?
That's a great question. I'll use an example of a project that we did for UT Health for a large MOB facility in Texas. And the architect that we worked with essentially created two sets. One, very simple, simply to get the permit process underway and start onboarding a GC and obviously getting bids for certain things. But then the other set, which was predominantly the interior set, we worked with hand in hand to help them through that such that no one was duplicating efforts, right? So back to that drawing piece, there's no reason why you would have multiple elevations of the same location. There should be one, and identifying really that kind of role and responsibility matrix of who's doing what at the very beginning simply creates more efficiency. But then ultimately that project, once that set was complete, then they layered them back together. That was actually what went to permit to build off of. But there was zero conflict in the drawing set and zero misunderstanding for who was providing what. And it went much more quickly. It allowed them, even though they had the same fee, right, to deploy their design resources more effectively.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I think we touched a little bit on this, but just to give you a more pointed question, what societal changes do you see further impacting or propelling industrialized construction?
Yeah, so we're a bit unique in that because we lean into mass customization, which allows for self-expression, I think that key term of self-expression is so important from a societal perspective in that, yeah, you could build white boxes all day long, effectively, efficiently, offsite deploying them. That's not going to move the needle from a societal impact and where we need to be, right, to meet society and what the needs are there. I think that we're on the, there's really, it's kind of coming at it from two ends, right? I'm seeing industrialized construction from an offsite perspective, from a residential application, with, you know, you touched on it at the beginning with rapid prototyping and 3D printing buildings. And so the single family angle is coming. We are coming from the other end of commercial healthcare, government, aviation, et cetera. So those, and they're complementary, right? And so how do those impact society in a good way, right? And so for us, and again, this gets back to all the way down to landfills, right? If we're going to be better as a society, we have to find a way to build better. And it is the one common thread. Doesn't matter who you are in society, you are affected by the built environment, whether you realize it or not, whether you're standing at a bus station, you're working at your desk in an office, you're getting your healthcare in a hospital. And so therein is the opportunity in that if we can use industrialized construction to elevate how we build, where people learn, work, live, heal, which is part of our own mission. Our vision is to transform how the world builds, which we've talked about a lot today. But that mission, to me, that's the societal impact piece in that we can truly affect how this impacts everyone's daily life by using industrialized construction to get there. We got a long ways to go, but you know, even with a lot of the conversation around adaptive reuse for commercial buildings, which we're participating in, we're finding ways to impact society that weren't available because we didn't have this method of construction before.
Thank you so much, Benjamin. For those that want to find out more about DIRT, what's the best way to do so?
As simple as it sounds, go to DIRT.com, two T's.
And if they want to follow along with you, do you have any public means to do so?
I do. So I have a LinkedIn profile, which I'll shoot to you, Demetrius. Also, there's a feed you can sign up for off our website.
Thank you so much, Benjamin. Love this conversation. Super helpful. And I'm hoping that more people get on board with industrialized construction and work with you. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for the time, Demetrius. I enjoyed the conversation.
And thank you to the listeners for listening. We'll talk again on the next one. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Spaces is brought to you by Lines, my Southern California-based architecture and creative studio that provides services focused on custom homes, home renovations, creative office, and specialty retail spaces. Find out more at lines.studio. That's lines.studio. If you learned something from this episode or think it would resonate with a friend, please share it and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really helps others find the show. If you have a question about the built environment or just want to share whatever is on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. You can do that at lines.studio/podcasts. Looking for similar content? Spaces is a proud member of Gable Media, a digital media platform where you can find even more content like this. Visit gablemedia.com, and that's gablemedia.com. And lastly, before I go, if you want to see additional photos, videos, clips, and other content from this episode, visit lines.studio/podcasts. Talk soon.